Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this is it. After many, many, many hours, you finally made it to our Dine of the Day review final part, we promise. And here we go over the box office, the critical reception, and our massive overall views of this interesting James Bond film. Enjoy.
James Bond will return.
Yeah, I think that's what we're getting these days, because they can't...
Yeah, they don't know there and then, do they?
No, because they're coming up with original stories.
Of course, the intention was to make another film within a year or two, so you'd get that a bit later with Casino Royale. But anyway, right. First of all, we talk about the box office, but there was a world premiere. So Partridge, it was hosted by Julia Bradbury. I didn't even know she was going then, actually, but yeah. Yeah, and it's world premiere at the Royal Albert Hall, which is where they all seem to be these days. And it had been transformed, though, into an ice palace. The Queen and Prince Philip were there. It's just one of the funniest things ever, them watching this film.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. That is something you should be mindful of.
Yeah, but it was possibly the biggest ever premiere, because you had every Bond apart from Sean Connery there. How good's that? Those pictures you see of them together, even Timothy Dalton bothers.
Yeah.
He's not very publicity, you know, he's not into all this, but he was there. So also there was Shirley Bassey, Shirley Eaton, Maud Adams, Lois Childs, Richard Keel, Fiona Fullerton, Babishley. And then, right, Madonna and Guy Ritchie, of course, because there's that picture of her curtsying for the Queen. Richard E. Grant, so I don't know why he was there. Boy George.
Desperate for a part.
Yeah. You'll love it, yeah. The last two, Harry Redknapp. And Jono Coleman. So, real stars in attendance.
Harry Redknapp watching that last scene. Brilliant.
Yeah. He would have loved it. He would have loved it.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
Yeah.
That's something I don't understand. Random, unrelated celebrities attending films that they have nothing to do with.
You could go and watch it like the Bond fans do in the dinner jackets at the premiere, but not the actual with the guests and all that.
Yeah.
Unless you've been in a Bond before.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
So, in terms of the box office, this is where we go full FYR. The budget was 142 million, so obviously high, but 100 million was given towards the budget from product placement.
Yeah.
100 million. Yeah.
That's Phillips, the shaving thing. 100 million from product placement.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Yeah. I mean, there's loads of stuff that was in it, wasn't there? But 20 companies, apparently.
Wow.
I did mention it years ago, but the whole buy another day.
Yeah.
After this, though, because he got a bit of bad press, they thought, right, for Casino Royale, and particularly, I suppose, it didn't lend itself. They only had eight in that. Only had eight companies, and one of them must have been Ford for the Mondeo. So,
yeah.
Revlon produced the 007 colour collection makeup, inspired by Jinx. You killed this now, guys. I'm sorry. Bond Barbie dolls. I'm not joking. Yeah?
What?
Great.
Bond Barbie dolls. Never seen them. So Lindy Hemming designed them. And there's a gift set with Ken posing as Bond in formal wear. It's owned by Brioni, who do the suits. So
Brioni.
No expense spared.
Wow.
Yeah, and of course, another time was there wasn't a game, but if you remember, we were like, quite funny that there was a Dino of the Day. They chose that for 007 Legends, but only because it was the only film of Brosnan's that they hadn't done. So
yeah.
And in fact, some of the graphics in the game are exactly the same as the film. So, you know, Daniel Craig against Toby Stevens at the end. So, also, the North Korean government, they didn't really take kindly to this film. The South Koreans were boycotted it, especially one of the reasons, the lovemaking scene near a statue of the Buddha.
Mm.
So the final thing, yeah. Clumsy, that, really. You know, costing them tens of millions in lost revenue. Yeah. A government official from South Korea said it was the wrong film at the wrong time. It was a massive success, obviously, at the box office. And it actually was at number one, and then it returned to number one later, which very, very rarely happens these days.
Nice.
It was out at the same time as The Chamber of Secrets, Harry Potter. The second one, the Christmas one. Yeah, so this is quite incredible, this. People won't like me saying this. So it earned $432 million, which is obviously the biggest one ever at the time.
Yeah.
But it earned, of that, $161 million was in America, which is more than No Time to Die got, not including inflation.
Wow.
Speaks for itself.
I know we had the pandemic, but the proportion of the, you know, I think, was it 750 it got, No Time to Die? People are like, oh, the Americans love Craig. No, no, they've completely abandoned him compared to the rest of the world. Right. Yeah. So it's the top non-Craig film at the box office, not adjusted for inflation. It was the sixth highest grossing film of 2002.
Wow.
Adjusting for inflation, it would be 14th on the list. So not bad at all, really. Above, just above GoldenEye and just below The Spy Loved Me. So pretty good. The only thing, the return on the investment things, the ones where these ones suffer because it's only three times its budget. And, you know, I don't know, Dr. No is something like 80 times its budget. Still a heck of a lot of money, very, very successful.
Yeah, right.
So it's the critical reception, isn't it, that has cost it its legacy, I think. We can go through some of these scores. So Rotten
Your Tomorrow. Father's legacy.
Yeah.
My family's
56% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's rotten, isn't it?
Is it rotten?
It's terrible.
It's not as bad. Yeah.
So it's 21st on the list. So can you tell me the four films that are
A View to a Kill, Octopussy,
Man with a Golden Gun.
Yeah.
Moonraker.
Nope.
Good.
Quantum of Solace.
Nope.
Diamonds Are Forever.
No.
Love Tom and his revisionist side.
World is not enough.
Yep, world's not enough. Is it? Yep.
It's higher rated on Rotten Tomatoes than no. Get out.
What the? Did I do wrong? Sorry, Arnie.
Yeah. So this is the quote from, you know, they sort of do an aggregate quote from Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah,
which may be a bit too over the top for some. But it's lavishly crafted and succeeds in evoking classic Bond themes from the franchise's earlier installments.
True that.
Rotten Tomatoes. So that was the critics, that. The Rotten Tomatoes audience is much lower, 41%.
Whoa.
So only A View to a Kill is lower than that. You wouldn't thought audiences didn't like it as much as critics, would you?
No, I agree.
So weird. Metacritic, 56. That's 18th. But you can disregard that because Spy, Love Me, and Live and Let Die below it. So, absolutely ridiculous. Right, finally, one of them. IMDb, 6.1, which sounds decent.
The lowest, I think, that.
It's the lowest alongside Never Say Never Again, those we don't speak of. Yeah. That's not bad, though, is it, 6.1?
That's an amazing testimony to a franchise that after 25 films... There is no film that the public, on average, deem less than a 6.
Yeah,
true.
Mm.
Yeah, so...
When you're stuck inside a formula as well.
Too bad.
Winning.
Can you remember, I think it's 3 years ago now, A View to a Trill on Twitter? Basically, if you don't know, this account's got all the Bond fans online, pretty much, hundreds and hundreds of them, and everyone put in their rankings, and he collated them.
Mm.
Did all of them. This was before No Time to Die, of course. So we don't know where that would have been. Where do you think it was in all the Bond fans in all the world out of the 24 films?
16th.
16th, Rob, you going for?
Yeah.
Was it third bottom?
Any more?
Surely low, I reckon.
Yeah. I'll go 24th.
You're right, John, it was rock bottom.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I did it.
No Time to Die hadn't been released, so.
Well, yeah.
I can't think of seven. I think of worse than this, so I don't know what I was doing.
But there are, for some, Rob, you're right, though, for some people,
yeah,
they do
it's
like
loved,
this.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's massively loved, yeah. Which I like that too.
The people like now, like George Aldridge, and well, Sam doesn't like it, but people in the 20s have a bit more of a fondness because they saw it as a kid. Mm. It was quite a good entry level Bond, quite accessible, quite rude. I mean, I can read out some of the crits. Michael DeKiner, they're so Rob these names, a film threat, praised the film as the best of the series to star Pierce Brosnan and the most satisfying installments of the franchise in recent memory. I mean, you have to, these are made up, surely, these. Larry Carroll of countingdown.com praised Lee Tamahori for having magnificently balanced the film so that it keeps true to the Bond legend, makes reference to the classic films that preceded it, but also injects a new zest to it all.
Are these real?
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly, I've heard of them.
Yeah,
Tamahori is a true filmmaker. A.O. Scott from the New York Times, the best of the Bond series since The Spy Loved Me. I can't believe this is true. Roger Ebert, ladies and gentlemen, how many stars out of four did he give this?
Two.
Any more? Any less?
One and a half.
I'm going to go with three.
Three, Rob.
It was three.
Yeah, three. Yeah. It has the usual impossible stunts, but it has just as many scenes that are lean and tough enough to fit in any modern action movie. There you go.
Mm. Did he watch the Ebert cut?
Yeah.
Especially prepared for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's those are the good ones, really. This is quite a funny one. Realviews.net. This is a train wreck of an action film, a stupefying attempt by the filmmakers to force feed James Bond into the mindless triple X mold and throw 40 years of cinematic history down the toilet in favor of bright flashes and loud bangs.
What's that?
You can sympathize with every single one of these reviews. You can really.
Yeah, they're all right. Right, Roger Moore. I thought it just went too far. And that's from me, the first Bond in space. Invisible cars. I can't imagine him saying this, can you? Invisible cars and dodgy CGI footage, please.
I just.
No.
That's not like him, does it?
No. Dodgy CGI. He can't. Yeah. He isn't taught like that.
I'm going to go with this. If I didn't know I could love Roger more than I already do.
Yeah, you'll take it because you agree with it. Yeah,
I'll take it because I want it to be real.
So, yes, come to the finale. We're going to just give our overall thoughts on the film. I mean, we've spent hours and hours on this over many months. If you've joined us, thank you for staying with us until this little last finale. There's a few things you can chat about, of course. Where does it place in your Bond films? Has it got better with age? So, yes, first of all, who's the most tired? They can go first. Go on, John, go on.
I like the film. That's the first thing I'll say, I like the film. And I'm not gonna buy away from that. Objectively speaking, there's loads to criticize. But I think I said at the start of this review, it's easy to overlook some of the things that are great. I think Vic Armstrong does a brilliant job. I think the sword fight, Blades is exceptional. The ice car chase is very entertaining. Some good stunt work there. I think Brosnan gives it all he's got. So I think there's some interesting story points. I think the whole North Korea thing and the torture at the start is very interesting. I put this on a par with Spectre as a film. I think for different reasons. I think I said this in a podcast recently. I can't remember what I said. I think the dialogue in this film is abysmal, whereas the idea of the story in Spectre is abysmal. And yet I find both of them compelling enough to watch and enjoy.
Hmm.
I think I probably just about prefer Spectre to this film. And I think that that is probably because of maybe even the fact that we've just discussed the last act of the film tonight, and it just highlighted once again how bad some of that is at the end, and where it goes to. But I feel that it gets unfairly maligned in terms of, like, you know, oh, it's awful, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there's horrendous bits in it, but there's some good stuff in it as well. And I think that it's not fair on Brosnan. Brosnan's the one who gets the raw deal here, because he gives it all to his end. And ultimately, he wasn't responsible for this being a bad film, but he's one of the ones who paid the price for the whole reset. And to be honest, the people who I think who are most responsible for the problem here are Purvis and Wade, and they're the ones who keep on. Yeah. And I struggle with that, if I'm being totally honest. This film does a lot of damage to a lot of people. Like, we've talked about Moneypenny tonight. I mean, it really damages her reputation. The only film that I can kind of think of that has damaged a long-standing character on that same level is M in No Time to Die, in terms of, like, that, and that's a real shame. It's a real shame, especially in this film when it was from a needless scene. It added nothing to the plot whatsoever. It was a completely needless scene. I really don't like Jinx. I think Jinx is, I'm going to say it, my least favourite Bond girl by far. Quite for me, I don't like her. But I do like Gustav Graves. I don't know where, if he did a ranking, I mean, I don't know where he'd come or anything, but I do like him. I think Toby Stevens knows what film he's in. And I think he just thinks to himself, I am going to ham this up and I'm going to give it everything. And I think it's not like the Michael Madsen one where I think that he thinks he's doing some great acting and it's hammy. I think Toby Stevens knows full well what this film is and just plays to the camera and gives it his all. And I love that about this film. I'll always have, like, fond memories of it. You know, me and my brothers watch this as on video endlessly. It isn't one I go back and watch a lot, I have to be honest. It's one of the ones I go back and watch the least. But it's not half as, it's not like, I don't know, the Judas Iscariot of the complete traitor that betrayed the whole of James Bond. I wouldn't call it that. So it comes 23rd in my rankings. I've really enjoyed doing this review. I had a right good laugh. I don't think my opinion has changed. I think I've got the same opinion of it, to be honest.
Chris, what were your thoughts when you, I know we've discussed it years and years ago when you first saw it, but having sort of reappraised it and everything, do you think that we did throw the baby out with the bathwater? Maybe we moved on too quickly and were a bit dismissive of Pierce Brosnan, some of the other elements in it. I know Judi Dench came back. I'm probably the only one. I feel a bit sorry for John Cleese in all this, to be honest. Obviously, he couldn't fit in with the reboot. He was almost seen as he only did a couple. He wasn't very good. A bit like Caroline Bliss's Moneypenny, you know, it's sort of, in the numbers, it's sort of cost her. But yeah, Chris, after these hours and hours and hours of watching it, has it gone up in your estimations?
No, I completely agree with what John said. I think its flaws are absolutely laid bare every time you watch it. You know, there's no getting around the absolutely atrocious dialogue. Just some of the creative choices that were made, that age it. Well, not maybe age it, but just place it in a time that it's just a bit naff, you know, like say the camera shots, some of the editing is all like, say, early Fast and the Furious, XXX, all those kind of just like, you know, not even middle of the road, you know, pretty poor action films. And for the Bond, it really makes me feel sad, because the Bond series should always be at the cutting edge of technology and leads the way in, you know, in stunts and, you know, within the parameters of what that character in the world is. So it makes me feel sad that they kind of looked externally and thought, I know, that's what the cool kids are doing, so let's do that, when really they should be going, what we should be looking at is at how the world is changing and do more with the character and the setup and all that stuff. That's how Bond evolves, or rather the films do, not in that kind of like, you know, yeah, it just feels tacky at times. That's the problem that I have with the film. I think the first half, two thirds are really good fun. Say not without their flaws, but that last third is, like they say, is a bit of a train wreck in terms of it feels rushed. It suddenly there's a slight cheapness to it, which you would never think you'd say that about a Bond film. Again, the Purvis and Wade thing of, you know, maybe they are quite good at coming up with stories, or rather more like magpies. You know, they're very good at like taking little ideas, whether it's from Fleming or from other films, and kind of bringing them together. But as writers, I just think they're absolutely terrible. So, you know, I think watching it, like I say, as John said, it's been an absolute blast, you know, reviewing it and watching it again and again. Always seen the flaws, but I've always had a soft spot for it because, you know, I really do like Pierce Brosnan's Bond. I really do think it was a shame that they got rid of him because, as we said in the past, you know, the Bond series can change, and, you know, and certainly when Roger was doing it, tonally, there's quite a lot of changes that happened. And Brosnan still looked the part. Still had the box office draw. You know, we're still at just the right side, you know, in terms of age-wise. He should have been given another one. And I think it's, you know, I understand the whole idea is, oh, well, in a post 9/11. Yeah, but that's to do with the stories that you're wanting to tell, not with the actor. And I think that will always be an issue with me. So yeah, I do have a soft spot for the film. And also I do like, you know, an underdog, and the way it has been treated over the past, you know, decades is really being quite unfair, I think. Yes, there is some terrible dialogue, but there's also some terrible dialogue in Roger Moore films. But, you know, well, maybe not. But yeah, I think, yeah, it will always be, you know, bottom tier. I do put it on now and then just because it's just a strange, curious film. And I do find I am often drawn to films that never quite fulfill the potential. And there is enough of an interesting story and setup in it to keep me going back. And, you know, like I say, set pieces, obviously the action set pieces being, you know, the main kind of draw. So yeah, I'm very fond of it. It's not, in my opinion, the worst Bond film, or the one that I like the least, rather. At least two Daniel Craigs for that. But yeah, I just think, I really hope that anyone who's still listening will reassess it. And those people who've sort of written it off as this, you know, this film, and go, actually, there is, I can see it for its faults. But at the end of the day, they were trying to make a Bond film for that time. And like I say, that creative control over it may have benefited from that, from someone saying, no, let's not do those silly whiz things and add this. And, you know, it's great that we got Halle Berry, but let's actually write some believable dialogue. Let's actually speak to a woman and understand how they speak, you know. So I'm hoping that people will be less hard on this film, because there's a lot to like. There's a lot wrong with it, but there is a lot to like. And at the end of the day, I will always take film that, and it certainly doesn't take itself seriously, I will always take that over that kind of, you know, something that thinks it's much more highbrow or more, you know, sophisticated than it actually is, because that's a big turn off for me, is a film that thinks it's better than it actually is. But yeah, I'm dying of the day. I'll probably watch it again in a couple of months' time. It's on regular rotation.
It is a Bond film, isn't it? You can't. This just feels like a Bond film.
Yeah.
Yes, it stretches credibility. Each sort of facet to it could have been done better. There's some good ideas, though, and I think, is it more execution more than anything, Math? Do you think that's probably where it goes wrong? Like, if the amount of times we've said, if it had just done that differently, or I would have done it in that way, do you think that's part of its problem?
I think it is. I mean, some of the dialogue is too much, that however you did it, you know, but yeah, I think it is. I think it is that. I've always had a soft spot for this film. You know, of course, I've never thought that it's a classic Bond film that everyone should love. I can understand why people really don't like it, and why it does, you know, I'm not a massive fan of rankings, as you know, but why it does feature on the lower end, very near the bottom often. I can understand why people will put it there. But for me, I've just always had a soft spot for it. And even though there are bits in the film, and there are, you know, parts and choices that really are almost, you know, offensive, I forgive it. I forgive it. And I think the reason why the kite surfing or whatever you want to call it is the worst bit, I think, is because it's the most prolonged. And one of the good things, again, I know it's 2 hours, 12 minutes or something, which at this time is fairly long for a Bond film, but compared to now, that's quite a short action film. It rattles along, really. Mm-hmm. It's never boring.
No.
And I'll touch on something that John said, because I do think, yeah, maybe this Inspector I would probably put similar, but this is shorter, this moves quicker. And as I've said before, I think Spectre's got good things about it, and I don't think it's the absolute, you know, worst thing in the world or anything like that. I there are parts of it I really like watching. But the idea of Blofeld being his stepbrother or adopted brother is worse than anything in this.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, as soon as you've got that in the story, you can't. It's really difficult to get past.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Invisible Car, yeah, well, it might be a bit silly in that, but you can't. You can get over it, surely, and I don't think it's as silly as... Yeah, it's never been a huge problem to me. So I think I've said this before about this film. I think the whole is better than the sum of its parts, because I think you've got the makings of a decent Bond film with some good ideas, lots of flaws, lots of things done poorly, but you've got enough of an interesting film and decent action to get you through, and that's why I go back and watch it more than I do other ones. And, you know, I do think it's a real shame, as you said, that this is Brosnan's send-off, that this is Samantha Bond's send-off, John Cleese's, Colin Salmon's. You know, it is a shame. And I'm not someone who thinks that for each actor now they have to have a send-off film, because I think that's we've had a lot of damage with that, with No Time to Die. But having had this, I think a fifth film would have probably been, with the age that Pierce was at, yeah, you know, final film a couple of years later, fifth film, do a Fury, what Fury Eyes Only is to Moonraker, and, you know, lower key film. We don't have to, you know, Bond should go off with the woman, not ordinarily, into the sunset in most Bond films. So it's quite easy to just have that as their send off, rather than them having, you know, a child or dying or anything like too extreme like that. And yeah, it just would have been nice if Pierce had had a better send-off than this. Because I think sadly it's tarnished his reputation somewhat unfairly, but it's just because they think that, oh, his film's just got more ridiculous and more ridiculous and everything. So I think I understand why people don't like it that much. I don't find that a very interesting opinion. It's just such an obvious thing to say. I understand it, but it's not the most interesting opinion. So for me, it's better than its reputation. It's deeply flawed. I will never dislike it.
I think most people would say GoldenEye is way the best, Brosnan. You go down a bit, those two are sort of similar middling, and then Dying of the Day is terrible. I don't know whether that is the general consensus. Do you think that, Math, or... I don't mean it's terrible, but I mean,
yeah,
I see some
people on Twitter who, well, firstly, some people who absolutely love Brosnan, but then there's a lot of people who seem to really dislike Brosnan and his films. Within that, some of them do like GoldenEye. I see quite a bit of hate for World Is Not Enough still, and I know there's this whole thing, it can't be underrated anymore. Well, it can, because people rank it really lowly and don't see the good things in it. So yeah, I would say that's probably about right, that GoldenEye is seen as by far his best, then the next two probably clumped together, and then this one quite a lot lower.
So probably The World Is Not Enough is the most underrated of the four, in terms of they are in numerical order or whatever. Rob, can you remember how you felt after this? Because obviously you'd feel even worse in a few years' time after it.
To have that feeling of utter dismay when I left the cinema after watching Die Another Day. No, I
you said it was halfway through, though, didn't you, I think?
Sorry, what was that?
When you were watching Die Another Day, maybe halfway through, you realised and gone, oh, dear.
Yeah, because the cinema had the fault with the reel. No, this is a hard one because this is the last time I enjoyed watching James Bond, which is 21 years ago now, which is really painful to say. And yeah, I know people are going to jump on me for that like they usually do. That's fine. I think this is like, in a lot of ways, it's a nadir point for the franchise. But I think there's so much that's not totally awful about it as well. I think Brosnan is outstanding because he gets unfairly pilloried for, oh, Brosnan was in charge when James Bond, you know, the end of James Bond or whatever. No, actually, it wasn't. It was the guy after who's actually in charge of the end of James Bond, but never mind that. It's bad. In a lot of ways, this film is bad. Bad, bad, bad. It's crass. It's vulgar. It's astonishingly poorly written. Everything about this film gets thrown out in the first draft stage. Everything. There isn't anything that survives a proper first draft rewrite here. But Brosnan's ace. Brosnan's totally, totally invested in, totally ace, and he's James Bond. He's James flipping Bond. And you've got a James Bond who wants to be there, enjoying what he's doing, giving it the absolute full star wattage throughout this. And this film lives and dies with Pierce Brosnan for me. It doesn't live and die with the writing because God knows that'll let him down. It doesn't live and die with the effects, which some is good, a lot are bad. It's such a massive curio. Yeah. For me. And I love a cinematic folly. I love that. You know, I love all those movies by, not, you know, arguably more revered filmmakers than Lee Tamahori. Anyone who swung for the fences and arguably got it wrong. I like that and I enjoy that and I enjoy watching that. I think there are moments in this that are hugely Bond and hark back to the spirit of the franchise that it is indelibly a part of, because this is part of the Bond world. It 100% is. It just goes to levels thanks to the writing and direction that are just gross. I don't really know what else to say. Like, this film, like, there's so much about it that I really like, but it just goes a bit sick and grubby. And it feels like I found a much loved pamphlet, but it's stuck in a diaper that's been used and chatting, and I just, like, I don't know what to do with it. It's like there's so much to enjoy, but it's wrapped in this absolute hornswoggle. So it's a real tough one, this one. I'm definitely going to say this is much higher in my rankings, i.e. it's probably like 21, 22, yeah. 23. Mm. But none of that is down to Pierce. None of that. So all this Pierce Brosnan hate that goes on online, I think is largely due to the stuff he was saddled with, which is what happened in Die Another Day. Because it sure ain't GoldenEye. And I don't think it's Tomorrow Never Dies. And if anyone's got any sense, it's not Twine. So it has to be GoldenEye, which is why people hate Pierce Brosnan, which they do, which is so erroneous and so stupid and against the spirit of everything that I don't get it. But anyway, I've loved talking about it because we always knew that when we got a chance to talk about Die Another Day, it was going to be a labour of love. And there is a lot of love involved with the discussion. Yeah, I don't like Halle Berry shouting bitch at someone's dead body. No, I don't like that at all. Would I show my... Actually, no, I wouldn't show my kids on this. There's no way. This film is not for children, by the way. Oh, we're going down now. Going to go down together. Anyway, it's so much better than the sum of its parts, to an extent. Mm. But, yeah, I've had a great time.
You're right.
Don't know what I really said. I just talked for 10 minutes. Didn't really say anything of any consequence.
It is. It's the most cartoonish Bond film, but it's possibly the least for kids Bond film.
Yeah.
Why do we not hear enough of Die Another Day? Could have been a brilliant film if it had some proper writers or a script doctor or something. It could have been a really, really good Bond film. I don't hear that enough. And I hear Pierce was a good Bond, but he wasn't given the best material. But he's better than that. You know, he has...
Yeah.
This could be one of the greatest performances in a bad, in inverted commas, film ever, you could argue.
I think you're right. And I think also it made box office this as well, didn't it?
Of course
it did. So you could argue that this is like Pierce Brosnan saving a movie.
Yeah.
Because he has, because ostensibly the movie, the writing in this movie is just so bad that, yeah, he saved it himself because you've got an actual James Bond playing the main character.
Mm. We go back to the whole, well, okay, it wasn't that well received, did well at the box office, but we'll just do the next one, a bit more serious, down to earth, everyone will be fine, good night. And that's where cinema went, of course, naturally, anyway. Born and all that. So the next one would have been more serious, because they do reflect the times. Right, Harry, we'll bring Harry in. I don't know where you'll begin with this, because...
No, I don't. I honestly, no idea what I'm about to say. Not a clue. I've loved listening to all your concluding thoughts, and I don't disagree with anything anyone said. So I think we all kind of feel the same, don't we, about Die Another Day, really?
You had it 16th, Harry, in your original rankings.
I think if I were to re-rank it, it's a different one to say that correctly. If I'll re-rank it, I would put it about 20th, probably. It's enjoyable. I enjoy sticking it on and I enjoy watching it. I enjoy the colourfulness of it and the fact that it's not pretentious. And I think in the current climate of Bond, although it's come to an end, there was something refreshing about Die Another Day because it was not pretentious. It was, you know, it was fun. It was ridiculous. It was easy, if you know what I mean. Those are the things I like about it. Those aren't the things that make it a good film. Though, you know, it's not. I'm not saying it's superbly done, and those are all intentional qualities and things like that. But for personal taste, I enjoy it and I like it. And yeah, like you were saying before, it's funny because it is close to being one of those fun ones that you would want to show your kids because, you know, you've got some interesting set pieces in there. But there's some things that I absolutely wouldn't show my children and I wouldn't show them other film fans. I wouldn't show them if I wanted someone to get into Bond, I would nowhere near show them this because it's a bad example. And, you know, watching it, as much as I love it, watching it recently, none of us can avoid all the faults with it. And I think the main ones are the effects and the writing. I think there's a good story in there. I think, you know, it goes to some interesting places that hadn't been done before and took Pierce to new parts of the world, which is great. Writing. What's that, sorry?
Torture scene is not...
Yeah, yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But this is it. There's so much in here, and it's just too relentless. It's too much, especially with the dialogue, the puns, the quips, Jinx's character. It just, if you take, there's so many things, and I think I've said it throughout this review. If you take them in isolation, yeah, pretty good or all right. Good, really good. Okay, yeah. Together, it's just too much. It's all bursting out. And the problem as well with it is, where it stands historically now, because it's seen as the ending, it's seen as the one that went too far and we had to pull the brakes on and stop everything that we're doing. And I used to resent that way of thinking. I thought that they did throw the... I used to think that they threw the baby out with the bathwater. They responded too much in a knee-jerk way. They didn't see all the good things in this. You know, there was Pierce in there that was brilliant. I think it's wholly unjust that Brosnan got sent away after this, that he is like, it was on him and it was on his shoulders. Like everyone said on this recording,
Brosnan is actually one of the best things about it, and credit to him for how much he's able to pull this through. The writers should have been immediately fired and sacked. I cannot believe that they are still involved in the franchise. It is on them. Effects date, effects come and go. You can get another effects team without anyone knowing. But the writing seeps through, and the, some of the stuff they're regurgitating now, they're still making the same mistakes. They're still showing insensitivities and just real lack of awareness, dialogue that's just too on the nose. And, you know, even in the new films, which people think are, you know, quite subtle, they're not. There's so much on the nose. And some of the themes are ridiculous. Math talked about, you know, this stepbrother thing being more ridiculous than an invisible car, and I can agree with that. Because the faults of this film can just stay in this film. You can just keep them there. And I think I'm more than ever realizing that the next Bond and the future of Bond lies in individual films. It's really important that things stay wrapped up in their own right. Everything, just like Moonraker to Your Eyes Only, and this is something I think I've always said and people say as well, you know, they could have just gone to one that's more low-key, more serious, and kept the franchise going like that and not reacted in such a way that is so dismissive of everything. Because the way they set up the new era was to be quite dismissive of Bond, which is sad. But I do think I've changed my mind slightly on some of that. I do think it needed a shift. I think something had to stop. They had to either slow down, even though I love Brosnan, it might have been that they recast in a more amicable way. I certainly think the writer should have been instantly dismissed, gone, because that's not acceptable work performance, that, at all. But I think when I've watched them through, could Pierce Brosnan have done another Bond and that invigorated or reinvigorated the series? I don't know. Or would it have just carried things on a little bit? Even if it was a better film, would that have just kept this really long franchise going? I think it did need an injection of something new at this point. I'm not saying I would have done it the way Casino Royale did it, because there's some things that I find really impolite about that, the way they did that. I don't know what it was. Definitely new writers they needed. Possibly a new Bond. Just something that kept you going in a different direction, but not resetting. That I think that's what's so disrespectful, the way they thought, this is so bad, we need to completely reset everything. No, I think they just needed a change. A bit like a Living Daylights, a new Bond, a down-to-earth mission, and it keeps going, you know. And if you'd left it a few years to build the appetite like they did, that would have helped. But I think reinventing the whole franchise is such an overreaction. And it makes, at the same time, it makes Die Another Day the laughingstock for making mistakes. And that's not fair, really, because there are lots of films in the franchise that have made mistakes. And it's just now, sadly, it sits in this, it's got its place in the franchise and in history as the one that went too far and cause them to completely start again. And had it been sandwiched by The World Is Not Enough and a more down-to-earth Bond film, it would have been much more accepted. Maybe more loved and not laughed at. But I enjoy it still. I enjoy going back to it. It is all about where they sit in history as well, because, you know, I'm quite down about the Craig films, but I'm sure if we have a better turn and a better run of films, I'll be able to look at some of what they tried to do a bit more fondly. And, you know, so when the last one you do is not great, it makes you worry about the whole franchise. Like we are now, and I think like they were with Die Another Day, but sometimes when you just look back, you can find great stuff in all of them. That includes the Daniel Craig ones, and it includes Die Another Day. For me, what Die Another Day has on the Craig ones, though, is enjoyment factor. Having talked about it with you guys and, you know, going into such detail and having such a laugh, you've got to be fond of it. It makes you feel great thoughts and happy thoughts. It makes you laugh. And like Chris said, you know, it makes you see potential, which is an exciting thing. That's good for a viewer to see something in a film. But yeah, I don't know if I can come up with any concluding thoughts, because it just kind of changes all the time, and I love it. I struggle with parts of it. I don't like the way it's treated. It deserves to get some of the treatment it gets. It's very difficult, it's a really fun film, and it's got quite a sad place in the franchise. And
I find it hard to be objective about this, and I think we all do, because you know the amount of abuse it gets, not being a massive fan of the new direction. but knowing the absolute adulation that Casino Royale, you know, it's top of everyone's Bond lists, nearly everyone. Never mind top five, you know, beats From Russia with Love, beats Honor Majesty's, the best Bond film ever. How on earth in your mind can you even think that Dying of the Day is either nearly as good or I enjoy it more than Casino Royale? How can you say that without people laughing at you? It is a difficult conundrum. So you've got to be honest about things. You've got to accept, like Harry says, that yes, it was a bit of a stinker in that sense as a film, but the Craig films were of its time. You know, people did enjoy them. They Casino Royale did even better than Dying of the Day. Continued the upward trajectory of the box office. The casting decisions, most of the decisions that the Broccolis, etc., and Wilson have done over the years, they've paid off, you have to say. Now, we don't know where that's going to go with the decision they made after No Time to Die. And even if you think it's the worst film ever, they can just say, well, it's the end of that run. That's the end, he's dead, start again. Which is what they could have done with this one. And I suppose they did do, in a sense. So, I mean, who, dare I ask, does anyone prefer this to Casino Royale?
It's simple for me. It's simple for me. I prefer watching this to Casino Royale. I know, absolute head knowledge, that Casino Royale is a far superior film to Die Another Day. Far better put together, acted, executed. But I enjoy Die Another Day more than Casino Royale. No doubt about that. I'm unashamed to say that.
If Martin Campbell directed Die Another Day...
Well, exactly.
We'd all have our hands up now, wouldn't we? For a bit being a better film. Chris, doing this in the last 3 years, has it changed your view of that? And it's unfair to pit one film against another. But it isn't with this, because no one in the right mind would ever give Dying of the Day a chance against Casino Royale.
No, yeah, I understand what you're trying to say. I think that I agree with Harry. I think in terms of what I would get more out of in terms of enjoyment of watching something, I probably would say Dying of the Day. I think Casino Royale is a very, very well made film, but again, it's a film that still has its faults, and it isn't. I don't think it is the best Bond film, certainly by far. I think because there are similar issues with it. Some of the dialogue is terrible in that film. Some of the story doesn't work. But it is a better. There is a stronger hand at that filmmaking, and that's the difference between Campbell and Tamahony, is that he actually, you know, so to speak, you know, has his hands full. I do. Yeah, and so yeah, they are very different films. And you know, I loved Casino when I first saw it, because it did feel quite exciting. I was like, oh, this is, you know, someone's really. You know, I loved Martin Campbell's work, and it was a new Bond, and it was just like, they're really mixing it up, and it felt, you know, going back to the books and stuff. But on repeat viewings, it becomes quite apparent that it's just not quite, you know, doesn't quite hold up as much. I think it's too long, you know, the you can see the where they've basically tried to tape, you know, the gaps between the novel and then adding new stuff to it. But I do, you know, very different, but... Last time I watched it, I felt like I was going to end up with a headache, and you know, I had to start with a headache very differently with Dying Another Day, because it's, you know, but it's fun, and that's what it comes down to. Like I say, like with Spectre, like we said before about the story points in that, which just ruin it for me. There's a lot that I do like about it, but that story point about, you know, with Blofeld is just I cannot get past it, in the same way that killing off the character in No Time to Die. I cannot get past that, no matter how great that filmmaking is, or the sets are, or the suits, all that, cannot get past that fundamental issue that I have with those two films. Dying of the Day is maybe an average action film with some really good, varying production values. There are scenes where I think this is only a Bond film can do. And then there are some scenes where it feels like, gosh, this feels cheap. But I always enjoy it, and it makes me laugh, and it never takes itself seriously. And it is, you know, you could in one way just watch it as if it was like a Carry On film, and you could probably get as much out of it, to be honest with you. And maybe there was some sort of decision behind that, because for no one to say, oh, this dialogue sounds a bit on the nose. No one thought to say that. All those people that are making these films, not even the actors, turn around and said, yeah, I'm not going to say that. But maybe that was what they were hoping for, is a slightly kind of, you know, leaning into the bawdy side of Bond films that people seem to think is a thing, but it really wasn't. But Team Dying of the Day. afraid.
Yeah. It's the one film which I would like to know the most about, the behind the scenes. You know, No Time to Die would be fascinating for the whole Emperor's New Clothes. Oh, yes, yes, he dies. It's brilliant, isn't it? Yes, yes. And all the workers, everyone in, you know, the people who work the production stuff, like, no, 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 we can't, we don't say anything. Do not say anything. But with this, Dying of the Day, like, what was Barbara's thinking when she saw the scenes and the dialogue?
Yeah, do you,
who knows?
Do you think that the anniversary side of the self-referential thing got too carried away?
Yeah,
and that might be the issue because it's such a different film to what came before. You know, it is like chalk and cheese.
I don't like.
Yeah, they approached it differently, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, you look at the Star Wars films and you see just a copy, isn't it? You know, like the Force Awakens is just a repeat. It's complete, you know, it's again well made, well shot, well directed, well filmed, but story wise, it's absolutely redundant, isn't it? I'm not. I know I'm being awful, but whereas you go back to the prequels, it's like the Dying of the Day effect. So much more original, loads of ideas, far too much going on. You know, somebody in charge who you can't really say no to, but you can get a lot more originality out of than what came after. So it's a two-edged sword where one's too far going one direction and the other one's going too far in the other direction. And I suppose I'm glad we have both. John, you know, you're the most fair, perhaps, out of all six of us on the Daniel Craig films. I know you've probably got worse as you've, you know, chatted to us over the year.
Yeah.
I do think we were all a bit down after Dying of the Day when we saw it. And I do, because you're a fan of Casino Royale, you must think that, yes, that was a good move and it worked.
I mean, I think I remember doing the Casino review. And I think I said when I came out of the cinema the first time I watched it, that was a brilliant film, but it wasn't a brilliant Bond film. That was my actual reaction. Mm. And that's because my experience of Bond films growing up were Pierce Brosnan films. Since then, I've changed my opinion on that. I think it's an excellent Bond film. I think it's fantastic. I think one of the main strengths of the Bond franchise is the diversity of it. And I think sometimes we can get ourselves in a bit of a cul-de-sac when we say, this is a Bond film, this isn't a Bond film. You know, if I look at my ranking, if I look at my top five films, what I'd say, they're all relatively serious Bond films. They're all like License to Kill, Majesties, Casino Royale, GoldenEye, which is a bit less serious, but it's got serious elements, Living Daylights, which is quite serious. But then I absolutely adore Moonraker as well, and Octopussy, which I suppose is the perfect example because it's a mixture of both of them. So I think my view is to not try and compare the two and say which one's better than the rest, or it's more about what kind of mood I'm in and take the value of each one of them. So neither Die Another Day or Casino Royale would be a default film I would go to. If I had like a Wednesday night that I had free, neither of those two would be on that because they're both the extremes. So and I want something in the middle, but there might be a time where I'm feeling utterly depressed and I want to stick on Die Another Day for a laugh. Or there might be a time where on a Friday night where Rachel said, should we have a film on? I'm willing to watch a Bond film. And that will be the time I'll put on Casino Royale because that's a bit more of an occasion. So it's, I suppose what I'm getting at is that I don't thank Die. I've heard people say before, right, this is on a different podcast, I heard someone say, Die Another Day is objectively the worst Bond film, but I'm thankful that it happened because it gave us Casino Royale. I completely and utterly disagree with that point of view. I think both of them have their value. And I think that a lot of people need to grow up and need to actually, and need to just get over this Craig v. Brosnan like rivalry and just accept that they've both contributed. Some people are going to prefer them films, some people are going to prefer those films, but at the end of the day, they both have massive value. Having said that, I'll be a baby about No Time to Die because they killed my hero. But apart from that, you know, I don't know if I've answered the question, but that's probably where I'm at with it.
You know, you could go on, can you? Like, did Dying of the Day damage Pierce Brosnan's legacy more than No Time to Die seems to be damaging Daniel Craig's. It probably has done.
Yeah. So on that,
both stories, the thing that's wrong with both of them.
The story,
the dialogue is one. The story with Die of the Day, but the story is that one is much worse than the Daniel Craig. Whether you liked or loved Daniel Craig, the choices are the what it's done for him in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned this point. So maybe it was today or something. That I think Spectre. It's actually the best. Was the right point for Craig to stop it. I think it ended in a nice way in a lot of ways. I think it was the best way for it. And I think that the big problem with No Time to Die is that you're coming from the point of view that we're going to make a film as a send-off for a Bond character. Mm. I think that's the danger. And I think that like what we've got with Brosnan is the what if it happened. Now, I'm absolutely wish there was a fifth Brosnan film. But if that fifth Brosnan film was going to be the Brosnan send-off and that's how it was billed and it was going to be all that, I wouldn't have been happy with that. And in that sense, I'm glad that Die Another Day is the final film, because no other Bond, no character, no actor, sorry, is bigger than the character of James Bond. So no actor is, here it is, if Sean Connery doesn't have a send-off as James Bond, no one else does. Because, and if Cubby Broccoli, his view was, don't know where I'm going here, but
I'm with you, John.
If Cubby Broccoli's view after You Only Live Twice was, we just get another James Bond because the character's bigger than the actor, that should be the view.
Yeah.
And the problem is now that we've moved away from that. We've completely moved away from that.
That was still in place. That thinking and feeling was still in place, I think, when Pierce Brosnan. It's only with Daniel Craig's era and because Barbara chose him and everything that it's changed, if you know what I mean. That I don't think there would be any intention to give Pierce a send-off film. There might have been the one that, right, this will probably be your last one, but I don't know if it would have had, you know...
It wouldn't have affected what happens to James Bond.
I think Barbara has always had this bit of a chip on her shoulder that she has to do things differently. Like the first time, her first film she was in charge of, really, I know Broccoli was officially in charge of GoldenEye, but hands off, but was Tomorrow Never Dies. Tomorrow Never Dies is the most, in the best way, the most run-of-the-mill James Bond film going, you know, and that's great. And then she pulls out, well, it's not enough, and I am the first one to say, fair play, what a risk, absolutely. But then she gets obsessed. She's been obsessed with how do we find the new thing about the character? How do we keep it going? And I genuinely think that's why she keeps on Purvis and Butthead, because they always have that same kind of mentality as well, of that what can we get into the psyche of Bond? Broccoli didn't have that. He said if it's an entertaining movie, that's what we get it out there.
Mm.
And I think that that's what we need to get back to. And in a lot of ways, Die Another Day was probably the last one of that.
There's also more respect given, like we said, to the character above the actor. So it would be, right, Pierce, you're going to be doing these every 2 years. Okay, we'll let you offset. You can do one film in between each one, no more. So you can go off and do Dante's Peak, fair enough, whatever. You can go and do The Tale of Panama. You can go and do Thomas Crown Affair. You're not doing two or three films in between. Whereas Daniel Craig, it's like you can do whatever you want in between them. We'll keep the franchise going with you as Bond, with no guarantee that you're coming back. And it's just completely the wrong way around. And yes, we still had five films from him, which is a good tally for a Bond actor. I don't know. I'm not really into what ifs, but this would be one of the bigger ones, wouldn't it? What if Pierce Brosnan was allowed the reinvention or the toning down, because it was getting too much. Would that have meant that the next Bond who came in wouldn't have been Daniel Craig? Would it have meant that the next film that we got was more of that tone? Or would it have continued the trend of up, down, silly, not silly, fairly silly, bit of both? Everyone is an individual film. It's a shame to have to think of 20 plus 5. And I'm sorry, you know, that... You can argue with saying you're not a proper Bond fan if you say that, but in a canon way, it is 20 plus 5. So even though this might be a terrible rubbish Die Another Day, 20th rubbish, it's still in the 20.
put, I put my hand up because there was something I wanted to add, but your point then, Tom, was so succinct that there's nothing really... No, there is so much.
It's not criticism of the individual 21 to 25.
Yeah, it's not. This thing that we talk about the Daniel Craig era as the thing that followed on from Pierce Brosnan's tragic Die Another Day, right?
Mm.
And that's what everyone talks about. That Die Another Day was so bad that this is what kickstarted this era. I mean, I would be very blunt, and I know most people who listen will know this, that Pierce Brosnan... I'm not even going to say it. I'm not even going to say what people believe here. Die Another Day didn't do great in terms of... critically, it didn't do great. We've just established just how much it's not Pierce Brosnan's fault, despite how much the internet would like to say it is. that kicked off 20 years of Bond misery for me.
20 years?
20 years of it.
Publishing that, isn't it?
I just to a point where I didn't watch a Bond film for 10 years almost after Quantum of Solace. Honestly, I just thought it was that awful what was going on. And it's not Craig. I know we talk about the Craig era, but it's not Craig. This is just terrible writing and terrible direction for a much-loved character. I know we've gone down a rabbit hole, and I'm going burrowing into that rabbit hole even further at this point. But we're now at a point where everyone is saying, you know, like, oh, you know, Pierce Brosnan's Die Another Day, you know, like, just undid James Bond and made it like... Hang on a minute. Have you seen what the current era of James Bond, the state of it is? We don't have a James Bond. We don't have a franchise. We don't have a hero. We have a dead hero. We've got nothing at this stage. Absolutely nothing. I would kill to be in the position of post Die Another Day at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not this position now where we're waiting years for a film and we've got some Netflix reality Jersey Shore bollocks to look forward to. I would kill to be in post Die Another Day. Genuinely. Well, not genuinely. Obviously, I'm not going to kill anyone, but like, let's just.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so frustrating. And we've got no hero. We've got nothing. Got absolutely nothing. But what we do have who are the writers who've been promised to stay on. And the production team that killed the, you know, like you said, Sean, killed our hero. Great. I'm not looking at this like a lot to look forward to. I'm now looking back to Die Another Day like the last time I was happy about James Bond, genuinely.
Have that underlying feeling of, yes, it might have been a misstep, but we're going to be all right next time because we trust the producers. They're going to make one in 2 or 3 years.
Oh,
I think they should have changed something after the Die Another Day. They needed to change something.
You can.
And like I say, whether it's the actor or the writers, but not the grand reset and in such a dismissive way. And now you've broken the series up. You've broken it.
Well, there is no series.
Yeah.
Now there's no series.
So we're here.
I mean, I will say I completely understand the view that if you get the rights to the one remaining Fleming book, then you're gonna use it. I will say that there was one Fleming book that they didn't have the rights to. They got those rights, and it's completely logical that they would use that as the next film.
Is this what happened with?
That's what I'm.
Is that what happened? Right. Thank you. Yeah, and I totally agree with that.
What it doesn't need to do is be a smug reset. And I think that's the issue. It's the smugness that I think.
Yeah.
Gets people.
They did it with Spectre, didn't they? As soon as he got those rights back. Mm-hmm. Right, let's blast it all. We'll do a whole, maybe it's going to be Blofeld. We won't tell you, but it is. And then, and by the end of the film, he's in prison. It's all over. Done.
And he's your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, if I wanted to watch some fella sulk himself across five films into dying, it wouldn't be James Bond.
Die Another Day, lads.
Thankfully,
was it the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end?
I think erroneously, I think Harry's right. The baby in the bathwater is the big problem here. You don't have to chuck it all out. You just don't. You just condense what doesn't work. And obviously, so obviously with this, with Die Another Day, what doesn't work is the writing team and elements of the production team. director as well. None of that is actually working to make a great forward-thinking James Bond movie.
And just take a few years. Just take, you know, don't go straight into another. Reconfigure some of the parts, but keep the franchise together. Keep it. Even, you know, Casino Royale could fit. No problem.
Yeah.
It is. I know this has been said, and Tom was one who pointed this out, even though the years are now greater in number. This is the last time there was a non-Daniel Craig Bond film.
Mm.
2002, oh, 21 years ago.
Yeah, wow.
Goodness me.
That is crazy.
Yeah, no, it's a disgrace, is what it is. And we've had five films since then.
I know.
It's a total disgrace.
It's going to be years. And so...
Yeah. The thing, we get bogged down in these discussions... As Bond fans, the whole Bond community, we get involved in these discussions, and that's when you think, oh, let's just stick on Die Another Day. As in, like, it's light relief.
It is.
It's easy. Yeah. It's straightforward. I'm tired of thinking about what the franchise needs, what it needs to make it better. What are the, you know, how can we make it more current? How can we make it more intense? How can we get to character? Can we just have a break from talking about it and just enjoy one?
Yeah.
Enjoy Die Another Day. It's right there to be enjoyed.
When they make the next one, more people will be saying, can we have a little bit more of what was in Die Another Day than, let's continue with what was in No Time to Die.
Mm.
Yeah.
Trying to end on a positive note.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different one to get. It's a monumental film in terms of, it's a seminal moment in the franchise, isn't it? You know, it changed everything. So you can't just look at it individually. It has, this film's had consequences.
It was like you say, you can't get around the fact that it is 20 plus 5 and Die Another Day is in that 20 and should be celebrated in the same way that I celebrate that we've got, you know, Never Say Never Again. Weird curio, and I will watch it every now and then. It's not a brilliant film, but I still enjoy it because I love that character and I love that world that he lives in. And there's, you know, yeah. Die Another Day has its faults, but it should be celebrated because it is part of this franchise and this franchise that it has over the years tried to cater for lots of different tastes and lots of changes in culture and society. And every one of them have got things right and got things wrong. It's just that with this one, it seems to be really quite clear, and I think it's also been a bit of a it's just been blamed, hasn't it? It's, and like you say, it's left a sort of bad taste in everyone's mouth that this was, you know, like you say, that if this film wasn't so bad, we wouldn't have had to restart the franchise. You know, that it is, and it is that overreaction, isn't it? And I think we've also got that. You can see that overreaction in the five that we've had recently, where it's all extremes. It's not, let's just have a standalone one. No, we've got to do that. We've got to do this. And then we've got to, it's just, and it, you know, but yeah, Brit's faults, love Die Another Day, and I will be watching it again soon.
Do you think it's fair to say that if it weren't for, and who said Siegfried and Roy, not them, Purvis and Wade, dropping the ball so much here, that we wouldn't have had 20 years of you know, like, disparity in the Bond franchise?
I honestly cannot believe that when they... Right, so this film that they made, and like I say, it has its faults, and it feel like the production was rushed, and it wasn't a smooth production for Die Another Day by any stretch of imagination, that when they decided to reflect on it and they said, right, well, we need to make some changes, the one thing we'll keep is the two hacks that are responsible for all the worst things.
Yes.
And honestly, all the worst things that are with this film, we'll keep them, but we'll get rid of all the other people who've been part of this and bring them back for the reboot and keep bringing them back, even though we keep hiring and must be spending a fortune on additional playwrights and authors to come in and polish it and do everything like this. But we'll keep these two absolute plebs. It is beyond me. And that's, you know, when people say, like, I don't really like the fact that the way that that Barbara Broccoli's kind of treated, dismissed, that she doesn't have, you know, any ideas. But for me, that's the one where I really question her decision making. Is that those two are clearly to blame for everything that's wrong, or the vast majority of what's wrong with that film. But she kept them on, and I will never understand that. I cannot get my head past that. How many other writers are out there who they could have spoken to? You know, it's just, honestly, mind boggles that they still get paid and keep 20 coming back.
20 odd years later, they're still coming back.
Yeah. Talk of them being part of the new after Daniel Craig. Yeah.
They're not in demand, though, are they? They've just done one spy series for the BBC. Yeah. That's it, is it?
Yeah. Plunkett and McLean must have been one hell of a film.
It's a movie, you know, Purvis and Wade, Seafree.
John English.
Yeah.
But no, Broccoli and Wilson. Lads, we'll call time on this epic review for the many months we've...
Is it nearly a year?
It's nearly a year, and it's been well worth it, I tell you.
When did we start, Tom?
I can't... Well, it must have been... I think I've moved house. I think Matt's been married. I think there's various things happened since
We listened to some of the Thunderball review on our honeymoon.
Honeymoon?
That was released in January.
But we were excited to talk about it, weren't we?
Oh, yeah.
I would happily go back and talk about it again.
I would, Chris.
What we did last time, in fact...
It was announced next.
We announced what we were going to do next.
Mm. Now,
are we going to... flipping heck.
I've listened to everyone, what everyone's thoughts about what we should do next. And John in particular said, this is a divisive Bond film, you know. Yes, we've had fun. There'll be big debates coming off social media probably as a result of this review. But let's do something non-divisive. So Spectre.
Knives out now.
No, not doing that. No, so I think, I'm afraid it is time, 3 years on, probably our favourite Bond actor. It's going to be The Living Daylights.
Glory.
We've got to do saving them like your favourite bit of your meal. Now, you eat that bit at the end, don't you?
Yeah, just keep the roasties on the side.
Well, it's a bit like Quality Street, and I saved and saved the ones I liked, and then, of course, come back, Jennifer's had them all.
So. Yeah.
Gobble them up while you can.
I cannot wait.
And
that's so good.
I think as well, what we might do with Dine of the Day, after this review's come out, we will do a debating Dine of the Day episode. A bit like we did for debating No Time to Die.
Yes.
Get some of you fans to come in, chat with us, debate the film, and we want people who love the film.
Could we also debate not just the film itself, but the legacy of Dine of the Day?
The legacy, absolutely.
Yeah. Not just the film topic. Itself, but I think the legacy of Dine of the Day is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's the most fascinating out of all 25, because obviously No Time to Die is too raw still, even though it's 2 years. Oh, dear.
Well,
right. Lads, thank you very much. It's been magnificent.
Loved it.
We will be back.
Superb, gents.
Other episodes. Living Daylights.
Really, 007 will return.
Yeah. We'll try and get out by the end of 2024. So that's all we
have. Wait, don't pull it out. I'm not finished with it yet.
See? It's a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm. Leave it in.
Well, it's got to come out sooner or later.
No, leave it in, please. A few more minutes.
We really have to get these back.
Still the good guys, huh?
I'm still not quite sure how good you are.
Oh, so good.
Especially when you're bad.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.